Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Haere mai, welcome to Caucus. Nice to have you along with us for another week as we inch closer to the election. If you had any doubts that election 2023 was going to be about economics and about the cost of living, then that was probably assuaged this week. Because it all got about the money.
Just tell me where the money's coming. Show me the money.
That, of course, was John Key and...
And I'm Guyon Espiner.
Yep, and I'm Lisa Owen.
And I'm Tim Watkin. And here's Julian Wilcox. Oh. Julian's not with us this week.
Is it our first caucus defection?
No, he's still in the party. He is not allegedly drink driving anywhere. He's not selling off shares anywhere. He is just in Christchurch shooting some stuff and cannot make
and
us.
And by that, we mean filming. Yeah.
Yes, filming things. So, look, welcome along. And it's great to have everybody here. Big week, taxes and working for families and GST and all these things.
Today I'm announcing that if re-elected, Labor will remove GST from fresh and frozen fruit and veggies from the 1st of April next year. But it doesn't end there. Today I'm also announcing that if re-elected, on the 1st of April next year, we will make the largest ever increase to the Working for Families in Work tax credit.
Initial reaction, guys?
Well, I've actually been quite taken by the level of cynicism of Labor on its GST off fruit and vegetables, particularly around this thing, how they've been saying, well, look, this isn't a policy for experts, because every tax expert that you could throw a GST-free tomato at has said, what a dog of a policy.
Everyone.
Not only does it give you very, very little in terms of return, maybe $5 a week for a family, for a household, but also that it's difficult to administer. It's a lot of it won't be passed through. But this idea that somehow, oh, it's not a policy for tax experts. I mean, we've just come off the back of COVID, and I see that, Labor's lifted the final restrictions, and we're all urged to follow the expert advice. So to say with tax policy, oh, it doesn't matter what the experts think, despite numerous tax working groups over the years saying it was a dog of a policy, to somehow just make this blatant populist grab with GST off fruit and veggies and to say the experts don't matter, I thought was cynical.
Oh, absolutely it was cynical. And not just any old tax working group, but the man that they hold up as the hero of finance ministers, yeah. Michael
the
Cullen.
The godfather.
The yeah. godfather, you know, who said, yeah, not the most efficient delivery mechanism.
Do you want to know precisely in 2019 he said, his group precisely said, does not recommend removing GST from certain products such as food and drink on the basis that the GST exemptions are complex, poorly targeted for achieving distributional goals and generate large compliance costs.
Yeah, absolutely. And other people have echoed that. But I also think it was cynical to say that about these economists and experts, in the sense that the impression was given, they're begrudging you $5 in your back pocket each week with this GST saving. No, they were not questioning whether it was worthy to give people some money back as a cost of living relief policy. It was purely the delivery mechanism that was in question. And Labor's own, they put out, their Q&A sheets with their policy every time, and their own estimation, I think it was, $4 something? It's not even $5.
$4.25, I believe.
$4.25.
But it's popular. Just to play devil's advocate on that. I mean, this is an election campaign. They want to win. They are behind in the polls. And the focus groups love this stuff.
Buzzing in.
Focus groups love it.
Buzzing in. Do you think when they asked people in those focus groups, and I really want to know this, did they say to them, should we do GST off fruit and veg? And do you like that idea?
You'll get $5 a week.
Did they tell you the number?
No. People hate GST, obviously.
Yeah.
And there's a perception, obviously, fruit and veggies are very expensive. We've all been either put the vegetables back ourselves or watched others do it, and it's a pretty awful experience. Mm. They've been up, 23% in the last year or so. I mean, it's extraordinary. So obviously, you know, GST is a hated tax because it's a tax. So, yeah, I get that it might be quote-unquote popular, but as Lisa says, popular when you are told how much you're going to get?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you look at the peak return year, which is 2027, 2028, when they say it's $565 million that basically people will get in their back pockets. If you assume that there's 5 million of us, roughly, that's $113 per person. Why don't you just hand the money out?
But look, there's the politics.
I'm being serious.
No, seriously. Yeah, and this, I think you would have been better to actually just do a direct cash transfer and let people spend the money, and then you could have targeted it at the people who really need it, because obviously the better off people are going to get more back here.
This is, you're right, and it's not targeted. I mean, it's interesting, people who are defined as lower income, also from the Cullen Working Group, 20% spend 20% of their money on food, whereas people who are regarded as high income only spend about 14% of their money on food. So in that sense, it's progressive, in that proportionally it is. But you're right, in terms of nominal figures and cash dollars, rich people are going to do better from this because they spend more money on food. There's some real questions. I get the point about the bad economics. It's the politics that perhaps is smarter than we're giving them credit for. It does, doesn't it, reinforce the working class hero of Chippy, your man from Lower Hutt, who actually gives a damn about what you're paying down the shops.
Well, I thought that was sausage rolls, not fruit and veggies.
Yeah, and could you buy a sausage roll for $4.20, whatever, these days, anyway?
And doesn't it contrast with what National's going to give in terms of tax cuts?
One of the things I would say about that, when you have very grassroots organisations like Child Poverty Action saying that it is a sad way, Susan St. John's exact words, sad way to give $4 a week to low-income families. And, people, David Latali saying it's not going to make any difference, who runs a food bank and is involved in a lot of social services, who said, actually they'd like milk and a loaf of bread before a zucchini, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, can we name, it'd be easier for us to flip this around, can we name anyone who supports it? it's outside the Labour Party. Have you got those crickets again that we played for Julie?
The focus groups.
Yeah.
The other thing with this is
if it were ever to come to pass, it'd be very difficult to overturn again.
Yes,
because one of these policies, I mean, interest-free student loans, a bit similar in that no one who's really crunched the numbers on it terribly thinks it's a great policy economically, but it's very hard to overturn. Can you imagine if it were to come to pass, a future government trying to put the GST back on?
No.
It would be very, very difficult.
No, it is one of those locked-in things, and that's what they found in Australia and other countries, is that they put it in, there's endless arguments in Australia back in the day about what is a processed food, what is a loaf, how do you define
what qualifies for kashia or no for kashia.
Britain is a Jaffa cake, a biscuit or a cake, all of those debates, right?
If it's got icing on it, it's not bread. If it's a glaze, it is. I mean, those were actual.
And that could be a show me the money moment. I mean, see, Lloyd Burr had a bit of fun with that on News Hub the other day.
We're
bringing in a bag of shopping. And I mean, so that could well haunt them through the campaign.
Yeah, and Labor has gone back on this over the years. So this is this week's little bit of history, is going back through Labor.
Oh, this is the history lesson?
This is the history lesson, so sit comfortably, children. No, Labor back and forth over tax, right? 2011, which is why I played that Show Me the Money clip at the beginning. 2011 was when Phil Goff went up against John Key and said, let's take fruit and veg, take GST off fruit and veg. The argument, interesting then, was much more, it was in reaction to National increasing GST, right, from 12.5 to 15%.
Yeah.
So it was partly in the context of that. And also they made a big push on the anti-obesity part of it, that this was going to save health dollars down the track, which has kind of been absent. I mean, it's been mentioned, but it's been not nearly as emphasised this time around. And then David Shearer was like, don't particularly like this idea, and dissed it a few times without actually ever doing anything about about it at all. Cunliffe then removed it altogether and said, no, we're going to go capital gains instead. And funnily enough said, there was evidence that items such as fruit and vegetable were mainly consumed by people who could afford more, and there were better ways to give relief to families who were struggling. So,
did he miss the paved road to Damascus?
Well, funny you should mention that.
I want to thank St. Paul's for allowing us to use this venue today. I don't want to present myself as any kind of saint, but I've been on my own road to Damascus when it comes to the announcements we're making today.
So this is Grant Robertson, who had a bit of a change of mind on GST off fruit and vegetables, because just a year or so ago he was saying this.
This one is one where I do stand by the view that GST as a comprehensive tax makes it very easy to administer. And there's people who in the room who've lived in other countries where there are more exemptions. It becomes an absolute boondoggle to get through. You know, if you do it off fresh fruit and vegetables, you know, or even staple products, then you get into an argument, you know, what's the difference between beetroot and canned beetroot? And I have to say that if you wanted to make a real impact on the lowest income people, you wouldn't cut the tax off, you know, fresh beetroot. You know, that's not what people on low incomes buy.
And yet that's exactly what he's done.
It hurts to hear that, isn't it? I mean, and you know he hasn't changed his mind. I mean, we know Grant Robertson quite well. We've interviewed him, all of us, many times. He hasn't changed his mind.
No.
He's putting up a very good front to be a team player, to be charitable to him. But David Parker took the more principled path, which was to resign his portfolio. Grant Robertson hasn't changed his mind at all.
No.
He knows it's a dog of a policy. He knows it won't deliver to low-income people. And he's left having to defend it when he doesn't believe it, which is why he's got in and let Nicola Willis get under his skin so much, because she's right that there has been an argument in the party over this policy, and that's why he's lashed out at her so furiously.
We're going to get to that a little bit later on, but you're right. You look, Grant Robertson says, oh, his road to Damascus was one of the main reasons that now means that he's seen the light on this, is that he can rely on the grocery commissioner to save us all.
Just snorting some tea there.
And I mean, it's a really interesting example, right?
When he was asked about that, was asked about that in the morning.
The power
report
of the Commerce Commission behind
the power.
The power.
The power, like a wand or something.
Yes.
Because he was asked about that in a morning report interview, and he was asked, sort of, you know, how's that going to work? And I think it was him who said, you know, oh, it's not like they're going to walk down the aisle every day and, you know,
sure.
Look at items. So I sort of thought, yeah, right, okay, someone maybe has given you a talking point to say, oh, that's an easy out. We didn't have a grocery commissioner then, we've got one now. So, you know, mentioned that. And the other thing he talked about was that, you know, I've seen that other countries have done it and the wheels haven't fallen off. Well, other countries had done it at the point where he said he didn't like it.
Indeed.
Right? And then he said, and now it's frozen, not just fresh.
So that's okay. But it's still not tins of beetroot, because that would be processed.
And there's vinegar in there or something.
Exactly. And look, if you look to the UK, they have the great examples that has been starting to be talked about this week, which is that period products, they took the 5% VAT off them, 1% got passed through. The supermarkets absorbed 4% according to a Guardian newspaper investigation, to which, again, Grant Robertson says, oh, but grocery commissioner, to which I would say, well, UK has a grocery commissioner as well. Didn't seem to make a difference.
The estimates are that between about 30 and 50% would be passed on. And 50 is the top.
Yeah.
I think there was a Deloitte report which showed it's quite likely to be 30%. So there are going to be winners out of this policy, but it ain't going to be poor people.
And, well, potentially has National been one of the winners, because they certainly latched onto this and made the same criticisms.
Grant Robertson has obviously had to swallow his pride and suck this one up, even though he was happily criticising the concept just 3 months ago. So, rough day for him yesterday.
What would you spend your extra $4 on, do you think, per week that you would save? Or will you save it?
Well, that's the thing. It won't even buy you a Coomera in the current cost of living crisis. That'll cost you $5.20. Look, you could probably get a cauliflower if it was on special, but you certainly wouldn't be able to afford any cheese for it.
Yeah, you probably couldn't get a cauliflower at the moment. About 5.5, I think, for a full cauliflower. But I've been
watching.
Can't
get a Coomera, mate.
I've been watching this, you know, Nicola Willis, Grant Robertson sort of battle, because they're quite interested in the finance spokespeople from the two major parties. It's always a good sort of shadow battle to the leadership contest, and you know Nicola Willis has been getting under his skin. I mean, she got the policy first several weeks ago. That must have really hurt for you know, no matter what you think of the policy, it was Labor's big election, you know, campaign launch, really, wasn't it? And she got it a couple of weeks in advance.
She did,
and she did that with another policy too, didn't she? What was that one? She had in advance. She had another one, leak out of Labor. She seems to have some pretty good sources. I don't know where they're coming from.
But don't you? But did it actually work for them, or was it didn't turn into an own goal? Because arguably there was so much anticipation then around this. There was some real attention on it. I feel that. The policy of, as you say, $4.25 a week, it's potentially underwhelming. But actually, it got huge publicity because Labor had leaked it, the National had leaked it. There was this weeks of build-up. Are we going to get it? Are we going to get it? When are we going to get it? So it almost actually gave Labor a really good platform.
It's the politics of it, I think, as Guyon is intimating. She is scratching away there, and she's had, you know, she's poked the tiger, and the tiger's bitten back, calling her, you know, the L word.
Yes, it did.
The mistake corresponds with a three-month gap, right? So somebody said it's going to start 1st of April, and somebody else said it's going to start 1st of July. Did you and Chippy have a disagreement about when this should kick in?
Complete lie here. Why would you repeat a lie?
Who told the lie?
Nicola Willis told with no evidence.
Whose lie was it?
Nicola Willis's lie. That's what you've just repeated there.
You and I might be in trouble for defamation. You don't throw the L word
it's
around
a lie.
Lightly.
She is lying about that.
Well, okay, I'm just going to say.
You get her on and ask her what her evidence was of that, or you could listen to what the Prime Minister said at his press conference when he said that we discussed different dates. The 1st of April was a date that I thought was a good date because it could come in at the beginning of the new financial year and give people some relief from cost of living. People, is that how it works now? People just get to make something up, and without checking with anybody, it's just asserted. Is that how it is now?
That is some serious freewheeling there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've seen politicians, and we were talking about Michael Cullen before. He'd been pretty upset with interviews, the late Michael Cullen, but that seemed disproportionate. There was real anger there, and
it was.
You know, disproportionate to what the argument was. And of course, journalists and interviewers are going to put different scenarios to people. It seems extraordinary, and it really betrays someone who has really had to fight a difficult position, because as we've said, he doesn't believe in this policy. He knows it's not a good one. Hasn't supported it in the past, and feels he has to put on a united front. And he's cracking there, isn't he?
And her response, I think, to give her her due, the tone was just right, probably where it should be, which is he's had a rough time lately. You know, if he needs a break,
he's had a tough start to the year. He's had to swallow a lot of rats, and it was out of character for him to get personal like that. And I've got some compassion for him. I think he needs a break, and I'm very happy to give him one. To be accused of lying is completely over the top.
Are you considering any sort of legal action, defamation against Jess Grant Robertson and not the radio station?
No, the last thing he needs is a lawyer letter. He probably needs a cup of tea and a lie down.
Mic drop. I'm happy to give him a break.
Yeah, is a pretty good line. It's interesting to watch Nicola Willis. I'm interested to see that they've put her on the billboards too with Chris Luxon, especially around my neighbourhood. Anyway, I don't know what billboards people are seeing around the country, but quite rare to see a leader, Luxon, and Nicola Willis finance next to him. So they're obviously putting big store on her.
Is she going to be the finance minister if it's a coalition of the right? Is that David Seymour's job, finance minister?
You'd expect so. You'd expect the major party. I mean, I guess the last time that didn't happen was 1996 when Peters was given treasurer, but they still had Birch as the finance minister.
A new job.
They created a new job.
Exactly.
So you always have to go.
Seymour could be the minister of deregulation or something.
So
I don't think.
That's the interesting thing. But there was the yin and yang there with Christopher Luxon and Nicola Willis. And there was sort of that awkward moment, which we were all feeling awkward about, with Sam Uffendale in the, you know, I go to the supermarket to give my my wife a break moment. And both Nicola Willis and Christopher Luxon were asked about it. And it was interesting, again, her tone, where she sort of turned and started to walk away from reporters and then paused because she couldn't resist, looked over her shoulder and said, "I'm a feminist," and then marched off down the corridor. So I think she is... she's part of that leadership package we've discussed before, that Christopher Luxon is having issues in the polling around popularity and trustworthiness. And then also another big thing this week has been the transferable partners' parental leave, mm-hmm. right? Nicola Willis had her own aspirations in terms of that as well, and she's been front and centre. And she was in Parliament saying, you know, I've birthed four children. So she's birthed four children. She's the, you know, deputy of the National Party. She's on the campaign trail.
On the billboards.
On the billboards.
And it is interesting. I mean, you know, National does strategically struggle with middle-class woman in the suburbs, right? They've had issues there before, and certainly after, you know, 2020 and the way Jacinda Ardern swept through a lot of that vote, National needs to do something. And Chris Luxon is not necessarily your go-to guy, right? John Key was.
Well,
he was charming,
right.
Blokey,
yeah.
And he won over a lot of the women's vote for National.
And also, Luxon's vulnerable on the abortion issue, right? Let's face it. He got trapped into that early on when he just got the leadership and was forced into a position where he agreed with a reporter that, according to his religious beliefs, that it was akin to murder. I mean, he didn't say it himself, but he was kind of trapped into saying that was his position as a pro-life person. Mm. And they must be sort of, crossing their fingers that doesn't become an issue, because, you know, you talk to a lot of women at the time and they were worried about the idea that Luxon might bring those views in.
Yeah.
He's pledged that he won't. And, you know, you have to take him at face value on that the church and state separation holds for him there. But so I think that probably increases Nicola Willis's value in terms of, you know, showing National's face and colours in that respect.
Yeah, I think she's critical in terms of the, you know, demographic they've got to win over to the swing voters. But look, you mentioned the... paid parental leave there.
Yes, for the partner.
Which was the other big thing that Labor talked about this week. So is that a big policy? Is that, you know, partners entitled to 2 weeks unpaid leave at the moment, but Labor has a staggered plan, 4 weeks, and it's paid for the other partner who isn't birthing the children?
I'm sure partners and couples will be grateful for that.
Well, there's 90 countries in the world that do it, and we haven't. It has paid partner leave,
yeah.
Right? So we've been well behind the go on that.
This is not a comment on whether it has value or not.
Sure.
But what I wrote down on my piece of paper when I heard that, and like I say, they like to put out a Q&A paper on their policies, and when I see the final implementation date for the full policy is, I think, from memory, June 2026 or thereabouts.
Certainly the next election campaign's about to start.
The end of the next term, if they were to win.
So that is like a pawpaw. Everything is tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. So there is that particular policy that's not implemented in its full capacity for several years.
Yep.
There is also their in-work tax credit, where part of it comes in April 2024,
yep.
But the other part, which is changing the abatement levels so that, to the advantage of families, moving the threshold up to $50,000 rather than 42.5 or thereabouts, that's off in the future as well. And I do believe that that's potentially 2026.
No, it is.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
This is what you do when you want
got
to
no money?
Yeah, you'd want to trying to be generous and fiscally responsible at the same time. But yeah, when you look at that movement and how far away it is, you know, inflation will probably eat up a lot of those gains anyway in terms of the working for families advantages.
But the first bit, I almost feel that they've undersold that a little bit, and it's been because of the focus on GST and the debate around that and its workability and the back down from Robertson and so forth. $25 a week from April next year for 160,000 families, that's pretty much every family that's earning less than 65,000. Most families that are earning less than 80,000, $25 a week. You think back to what Bill English did in 2015, $25 a week welfare increase, that was a big deal. And certainly pitched as a big deal by National. So I wonder whether $25 a week is an interesting targeted policy that they're not really talking about.
I think that's a
much.
Good point. And would if the policy wasn't leaked out beforehand of the GST off fruit and veggies, yeah. do you think they may have just have done them separately? I don't know why they wouldn't have. I presume that they thought, well, because GST off fruit and veg has already been sort of leaked out there, do we need to bolster it with this other thing?
Well, it's part of their 10-point plan, right?
So yeah, but that particular part of it, the credit, the working for families credit.
In work credit tax credit.
In work tax credit. That got panned as well by Susan St John from Child Poverty Action, who said what should have happened is that in work tax credit should have been folded into other family tax credits, meaning all children in low-income families will get the same assistance regardless of whether their parents were working. And she reckons that would have increased the number of kids who were, in essence, getting the flow down from that, an extra 160,000 to 200,000 kids who, as it stands, will get nothing from that. So it's about the size of what Labor has announced in all three of these things.
But, well, that's the interesting thing. That can take us into some of the strategy stuff, which I wanted to talk about, because I think you're right. It's what you were saying about earlier, that when you try to look generous when you haven't got any money and how you actually try to get the scale of the thing, right? Because if you listen to...
Should you just pick one policy, throw all
big.
Your eggs in that basket,
good question.
Or do you split it?
It's a cost-benefit thing, isn't it? Which is my main problem with the GST of fruit and veg. I mean, for the hundreds of millions it costs you, you're just getting so little back. We talked about Cullen a bit before. They were very good, in my view, at targeting. Targeted working for families. They targeted things very neatly, knowing that you haven't got a lot of bang for your buck. And this is the problem with tax cuts too, right? They cost billions and billions, and often you don't get that much.
But that's the point. The tax credit is the targeted bit. The GST off fruit and veggie is the, here we go, everybody, have a coomera. But the in-work tax credit is... You know, it's much more targeted, 160,000 families who really need it.
I know, but Chris Hipkins did not acknowledge that with the GST when he gave his speech and he said, now's not the time for me to be giving tax cuts to millionaires. Well, hello.
That's right. Millionaires still buy Coomera. They're the only ones who can afford to. But look, this is the bit that I want to play this clip from Grant Robertson in the lead up to this announcement on Sunday, because I think it probably sums up Labor's strategy, which I think is starting to really become apparent.
And that is the big question at this election. Who is there to stand with you when times are tough? Who is in it for you, and who is just in it for them and their mates? Labor has the track record of getting the balance right between supporting people and looking out for the future by being careful with the government's books. There's not room at this election for big promises, but there's always room for looking after each other.
Yeah, they're playing, nakedly playing that him and his rich mates card. And I think you'll see this too with, they're trying to ramp up the speculation on the foreign buyers ban and whether National will overturn that. That is the policy that New Zealand First and Labor introduced in their first term after the 2017 election to ban foreigners from buying residential homes in New Zealand. And it stood since then. And I see there's a bit of pressure on National to say whether or not they would overturn it. I think they'll try and put some pressure on there as well in that similar vein.
I'm just really intrigued that Labor is pitching itself as the very careful economic manager in this one. They're almost trying to turn the typical narrative of his head that National comes out and says Labor's tax and spend, and Labor says National is you know, cold and calculating and doesn't really care about people. You've got someone like Nicola Willis who's really trying to put the softer face of National out, that we do care about people, we empathise, we understand how much the Coomera cost. Whereas Labor now is saying, you can trust us, we're not going to go too far, we cannot afford to go big at this election. And I'm intrigued, when you're behind in the polls like Labor is, you're at the end of a second term, which kind of feels like a third term because of COVID and so forth. You've got the right and wrong direction polls going in the wrong direction. Labor, the temptation, right, the idea of a lot of things, interest-free off student loans, some big policy, right?
I
Labor's trying to say, we can win this election by playing it small, by playing it stingy and being Mr. Frugal.
Yeah, I think there have been real debates and arguments over this.
I just find it fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's. I agree. And you look at things like the wealth tax, which they clearly wanted, elements of the party wanted to do. I don't think they can work out whether they wanted to be a traditional, you know, left-wing economic policy that was going to raise taxes, wealth taxes and raise taxes on the rich. And redistribute. And I think in the end, Chris Hipkins has come through the middle and said, no, we want to play it conservative. And I think
through the middle being the point.
And I think there have been real, you know, some pretty white-hot debates over this. And we've only just seen a glimpse of it, really.
Is it through the middle, or do we have two vehicles at high speed hugging the centre line coming to a head-on collision? You know, in terms of the party positions, and by that I mean the two major parties, is there enough between them? Are they hugging the centre line too hard? And also, when you look at this, we can't make big promises. I think we had this discussion in our first caucus meeting of this election year. We talked about the backdrop, and that backdrop, you know, the landscape's just had a few more colours painted into it this week.
Exactly.
Because hundreds of millions of dollars have just been shaved, sucked out of the economy with the drop in dairy prices, right? We've had the Reserve Bank governor indicated that potentially we've got one more on the ratchet with the interest rates, depending on what happens.
Yes.
And the forecasts, if you look at the little appendices in the monetary policy, it has the official cash rate, you know, ride out over the next couple of years. I had to go right down to the bottom of 2025. To find any significant drop in the rates.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's checking in with economists too. They're saying this is this kind of recession, if we are still in a recession, but this tight market is exactly what the Reserve Bank wants. They want us to suffer. They want to drive inflation down through that suffering. So we're not going to see interest rates moving for a while. And you know what's going to happen in the next year or so? Tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of New Zealanders are going to fix their mortgages, and it's going to hurt hugely. Which is why I guess you see this very conservative campaign. I think you've got people, but you ask the question about whether they're hugging the centre. I think you're right, they are. But so what they're left with is the fear card. That's what I'm saying kind of starting to come out, and that what you can do is try and draw a distinction between what you're not, right? I think a lot of this campaign now. My gut, you can tell me in a few weeks whether I'm wrong, but we're going to see a lot of these, especially with the two-man party, saying we are not that, right? We are not that. Labour is saying we are not, National is going to, what is they going to do? Repeal Three Waters, scrap the new RMA replacement they just got through yesterday, bring back the foreign house buyers, bring back prescription fees, cut the free and the half-price public transport, blah, blah, blah. Won't do the GST. That's Labour's wedge. All of those things are their wedge issues, right?
Right, yeah. And just one thing on that, the foreign buyers.
Their strategy is.
Get your point totally. I'm just going to wade in on the foreign buyers because we're about the detail here,
sure.
Right?
Okay.
So Christopher Luxon has said, and I'm quoting him, clearly there has to be restrictions on foreign buyers.
Yep.
Right? He said that in the last 24, 48 hours. So we're not talking potentially a complete whoop gone.
Yeah.
And also the ban on foreign buyers under Labour has never been a complete ban on foreign buyers. So you could buy off plans
you
for
could
some
buy
apartment
off plans
blocks and
there
all
were
the
some countries,
so
I
just
think,
to make the
Singapore
distinction.
Or Hong Kong,
sure,
or someone
but you've
was
gone
in,
you've
was
gone
exempted.
From
correct.
But 3,800 foreign buyers in 2018, 507 this year.
Yeah. But let's be honest, it's negligible. It's around the margins. I mean, they were 2.9% of buyers in 2017 and the year before it came in. If you look at the impact on house prices, come on. I mean, they went up massively between 2020 and 2021 when we had the asset bubble, right? And now they've come down. Why? Because of interest rates. It's all of this is
you know
happening.
What it's like?
It's not about foreign buyers at all. I mean,
well, it's a few percent, right?
It's like GST
or fruit and vegetables. Vegetables.
Yes,
it's a little bit.
Around
it's
the market. Yes, yes. Obviously, if you expand the number of people who are able to buy something, then yes, the price will rise. That's basic economics.
Yeah.
But it's negligible. And again, it's one of those policies that you know, it's hard to overturn, because for National, they're going to be saying, oh, yes, we will let foreign buyers buy again, and that's not going to be popular. But it doesn't mean that it's a policy that's had a big impact on the housing market. Fair. It never did.
And in terms of Labor and their policy, you know, in the what to look forward to or what to look out for, Christopher Hipkins said that they've got a 10-point plan for the cost of living. And at my count, GST and the paid parental was 8 and 9. That leaves one roll of the dice.
So just
for 10.
One.
Just so, one for the cost of living.
So we do
policy.
Think they are separate. They're not 8 and 8 all looked together.
Well,
is
they were announced on separate days. I have made inquiries about that yet to get an answer.
Right.
But you know, if rough calculation, there's one more cost of living policy to come. And also, Christopher Luxon, in the context of the foreign buyers policy, is saying, just wait, there'll be an economic growth plan coming soon.
Right.
So that's going to be potentially their next policy drop. And
that'll be interesting to watch for. But it's going to have to be, if they're going to be consistent with their message that Labor is the party of frugality, or not austerity, it's too strong a word, but you know what I mean? That they are frugal, then it's going to have to be a very carefully pitched one again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, one interesting thing, because we're focused mainly on National and Labor in this chat. The Greens, almost instantly after these announcements from Labor, put out a comparison document which sort of said, oh, this is what they're saying you're going to get, and this is what we'll give you.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting. Right off the hoof, they were ready with their numbers. And you like to give a history lesson every week, Tim.
I do.
Okay, so from the other corner, hashtag Nerds Unite.
Woohoo!
The Greens have a calculator. So, and I would love, you know, I would love all
the power.
I would love all the parties to have this. So if they've got them, someone let me know. But the Greens definitely have a calculator where you can go on and punch in your imaginary children and say how old they are and what you earn and how many assets you have. And it will give you a precise number for whether you're paying more or paying less and how much it is. It'd be good if the other guys
And it was the Greens' idea, wasn't it, to have an independent arbiter for all these policies, and then we wouldn't need to get into these fiscal hole arguments that we have every election. And I think shame on the other parties for not picking that up, especially National, I think, who opposed that.
Opposed it.
Having an independent arbiter so people can go to a trusted source to estimate the policy would have been an advantage, I think, for the whole public discourse on this.
Well, isn't it lucky they have us still?
Yes.
And our history lessons and our appendices and our war stories from years past, we're here for you, New Zealand.
Yes. And Julian Wilcox will be too next week. He
will
us.
Be. Damn it, he will be. He's back and he's going to be fired up, ready to go with stories from Christchurch. That looks about our time, doesn't it? I think we've covered the ground. We'll be back with you next week, so it'll be great to have your company then. Thanks very much. From Guy and Lisa and me, see you next week.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.